Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is the text number as usual. Dave Elliott. Dave, good afternoon.
Afternoon, how are you doing?
Good. What's the problem? What's the challenge?
The challenge is Ryanair as ever. My problem specifically is my height, I suppose. I'm 6'4", so I don't fit into the regular seat that they offer. So every time I take a flight, which is fairly often, I pay the extra to book extra legroom.
Okay.
But what I'm finding increasingly, the last four times I've flown, is I'll book the extra legroom on the website, get an allocated seat number, get on the plane, and they say, well, actually, the extra leg rooms are the two rows behind you, but we can't change you because you've already got your seat number on the boarding pass. So I'm kind of stuck in agony for about 3 hours on a flight to Spain, and that's been the case for the last four flights, and probably about a dozen or more over the past few years.
And who's sitting in the seats that you thought you booked with the extra leg room?
So what happens is on the website, if you book rows 16 and 17, they look like they're the emergency exit rows, which have, but on some of the more modern planes, which is increasingly more the case with Ryanair, I think they're buying in new stock, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The extra legroom rows can be a different row, so like 17 and 18.
Okay.
So someone will have 18, have extra legroom, but not have paid for it.
That's
typically what's happening.
But you have paid for it.
Extra. I have paid for it, but I don't get it. That's the problem.
And there's no way the staff on the plane could say there's a little bit of a mix-up and the extra leg room is you're in the next seat and move the two occupants.
You'd think they would be able to, but they never are. I mean, the only time that's happened is when someone in the extra legroom seats that shouldn't be there has been overhearing, and they've kind of volunteered to swap with me, which is very nice of them. But I don't want to be reliant on that. You know, it puts me and them in a difficult position. So I don't see why either the cabin crew can't swap me and take the difficulty out of the situation, or where the Ryanair... I mean, they obviously know what kind of plane they're flying in advance. Why they couldn't reissue the boarding passes to take account of that switch?
And what do the staff say, Dave? Joe at rt.ie 51551. If you're over 6'4", what do the staff say?
They say, well, you know, it's tough. We have to change the plane since you actually booked it, and that's it. You know, apply for a refund when you get back.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, that's missing the point. You know, I'm in agony for 3 hours. I can't properly sit down on those seats. I'm probably more at risk for something like DVT for not being able to move around.
Deep vein thrombosis.
So, like, a refund's no good to me. I want to travel in comfort, and I don't mind paying a bit extra to travel in comfort. But I'm not. Ryanair don't guarantee to provide me what I actually paid for, if you see what I mean.
And how many times has this happened, Dave?
I'd say the last four in a row.
Okay.
And sort of increasingly over the last year or so. I think it's because...
Okay, so the last four times in a row, it happened that you were in the wrong row.
Correct, yeah.
Four times in a row. Okay, now, Ryanair, say, do they appeal to the rightful occupants of the wrongful row, if you follow me?
No, they haven't really been very helpful. Their priority is just to get everyone seated in the seat that is designated on the boarding pass and to get the thing off.
Now, Dave, forgive me, because there was a bit of a giggle in one of my questions, but I presume it is painful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're kind of making light of it.
But, I don't mean to.
I suffer a bit from my joints. It could be nothing to do with this, right? It could be just old age, rheumatism, whatever. But I'm sure that 3 hours stuck in an uncomfortable position isn't making it any better. So the only way I can actually sit in the regular seats is to stick my knees out either side. So one lands in the aisle and gets clattered by the drinks trolley every 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And the other's over by my partner, who then has to sort of shuffle over to the right to avoid me sort of... You know, the pain and inconvenience on her side. So it's an uncomfortable journey, and it's not doing me any good.
And by the way, do you get much sympathy either from your friends or from radio presenters when you ring the likes of me, who was giggling at the start because I thought of the image of you with your knees up just below your chin. But then again, when you think of it, 3.5 hours in a relatively small tube. And awkwardness. But do you get much sympathy from people?
I think so. Most people are fairly understanding, you know, and as I say, people have volunteered to swap seats, but it's been on that kind of voluntary basis. No one from the airline is asking them to do that. And I think the only people I'm not getting sympathy from is Ryanair themselves. They just kind of hide behind this policy, say, tough luck, you know, we've probably got it written in a bit of small print that we reserved the right to change your seat bookings at the last minute and go away and apply for a refund. So I think people are generally understanding and sympathetic and helpful. The airline is not. That's my problem.
And they give you the refund, obviously.
They do after a while, but as I say, I it's not really about the money for me. I'd rather pay the money and have a comfortable flight.
Well, you see, what Michael O'Leary will then say is, why don't you go with another airline, which you'll discover is much more expensive than Ryanair, which is more than likely, not always, but can be true.
Well, that's fair enough for him to say, but he's only 5 foot nothing. He can fit in any seat.
No, but the point is, you are being charged extra for your extra leg room.
No, listen, I get the Ryanair business model, right? They do. I am a fan. They offer cheap flights and you pay for the extras. And I don't have a problem with that. Right? Okay, it costs me twice just to book the extra legroom seats for myself and my partner. Usually costs us double what the standard airfare would be. But I don't mind doing that. What I do mind is, having bought it, I'm not getting what I've bought.
Yeah. Okay, here's and Ryanair. Now, in fairness, they weren't dragging their heels in their response, but this is a written response. I'd like to sincerely apologise. That's a given. Discomfort the passenger suffered on his recent flight. You say it's your recent 4 flights. We carry out daily audits on each of our aircraft to ensure that all furnishings and equipment are perfect working order. However, for reasons beyond our control, from time to time an aircraft will be pulled from the operating schedule for maintenance and will be replaced with a different aircraft, which may result in some passengers losing their pre-booked seat, which you've explained... in fact, better than they have, but you have explained it, that the extra legroom seats can be different on different planes. We wish to confirm that the bank transfer of the sum of €42 has been authorised by Michael O'Leary in full and final, by Ryanair, in full and final settlement of his claim under EU 261 regulation as refund of seats. Sincerely... Regulator Admin Support Specialist, RASS. I don't know who the person is, but it says Regulator Admin Support Specialist. So what are you going to do? Why don't you just move? Sorry, it's not as simple as that. Have you looked at other carriers?
Other carriers are better, but they don't typically fly the routes that I fly. Ah, okay. So I've got a holiday place over in Spain. I fly to Malaga.
Okay.
Aren't operators that go on a regular basis from Dublin to there. And as I say, I've got no reason not to choose Ryanair. I think they're good. But in this case, they're not listening.
Okay.
And I also don't agree with that explanation. Then it's hinting that it's just an exceptional thing when a plane is in for unscheduled maintenance or whatever. I think it's more systemic than that. I think it's because they're updating their fleet and they haven't updated their website.
Okay, good point. Now, how do you manage a 6'4" generally?
pretty good. As I say, most people in those kind of situations are pretty helpful. There are occasions like take the bus to the airport. I'd be struggling for a similar kind of legroom. So if I get the chance, I'll dash to the end of the bus and get the one that's facing the corridor. But the point is, that's only like an hour journey. So it's not going to be as comfortable as a three and a half hour flight. Mm-hmm. No? So there are circumstances where the height is it's a two-edged sword, isn't it? I like being tall, but it's got disadvantages. But I think, like all these things, it takes a bit of a give and take on both sides, and that's the thing I'm not getting from Ryanair.
Are there any countries where you feel more comfortable being 6 foot four? Do you follow me?
I do. An interesting question. I've worked over in Holland and Germany before now, and I'd say there are more tall people there. But
okay. But
I also think it's a generation thing. I think we are as a species getting taller. So I see quite a few people my height and more. And that's what I'm thinking. It's why I wrote into you. I'm thinking I can't be the only person that this is happening to.
I take your point about the different nationalities being different heights. But Michael McCarthy is on 51551 text. Michael.
That's your go, yeah.
Help, Dave.
Yeah, listen, this guy is crazy. You just set the seat back.
You can't on Ryanair.
No, you can't.
You can't recline your seat on Ryanair, no.
No. You can't recline the seat. I didn't know that.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm 6 foot four and I fly with Ryanair and I never have a problem.
Well, hang on, do you recline your seat, Michael?
Well, I can't remember now, obviously, but you tell me you can't recline the seat.
Well, maybe, I fly Ryanair a lot. Dave Elliott, am I right in thinking you can't flick back your seat, which a lot of people, by the way, like, because you don't fling back on the face of the person. But are you saying, Michael, you have been on a Ryanair flight or you normally go right to the back?
No, I've been on Ryanair all the time.
Okay.
All the time. Unless I go to America.
Because you don't fly.
And then I go United.
Now, Michael, you're 6 foot four.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my father was 6 foot six.
And what happened?
He died.
Oh, your father was 6 foot six. Sorry, I thought you said you were. Now, is there... Well, Dave, you helped me here. Two of you helped me. Is there, would your height be in the upper part of your body rather than the lower part of your body? Do you follow me, Michael?
I have long legs.
You have long legs.
Well, straight in the supermarket, people come up to you all the time and ask you, could you get that down from the top shelf for me?
Oh, great.
Well done.
Yeah,
so that's kind of thing, but... Height is only a mirage, really. You're in your body.
Yeah.
Just crunch up. There's no problem flying.
Yeah, but for 3.5 hours, Michael.
Yeah, but you listen. I go to mass sometimes, and it's 5 hours. It's the Indian mass.
Okay.
And you're stuck in a pew that you can hardly move.
Yeah.
So it's all relative, Joe. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Let me stay with us, Michael. Joan. Joe at RT.ie. Joan.
Hi, Joe.
How are you? Great, thanks. What happened, Joan?
It happened to me a while ago as well, going to Lanzarote. And when I asked the air stewardess about it, she said what you do is when you're booking your seat, you book it for the outward journey and then it'll automatically ask you, do you want to book the same seats for the return journey? Now, they said, if you say no to that question, it'll then bring you up the map of the seats for, if it's a different plane than the extra legroom seats, you'll be able to see which ones are the extra legroom and you'll be able to book it that way. But never pick the automatic, never pick the same seats automatically for the return journey.
Okay.
If you know what I mean.
Never.
There's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of aircraft being built every day. And they're not restricted to 6 foot four. You know, like it's nonsense.
No, but you see, Michael, in fairness, it's not. Because what the point Dave is making is that he paid for the extra leg room and he didn't get it.
Yeah, but he did pay for the extra leg room, but he booked the wrong seat.
He booked the right, booked the correct seat as per his booking.
No, he didn't. He booked the wrong seat.
No, I didn't.
Dave, I can't. If you can explain to Michael how you didn't feel you.
Yeah, he could have booked two seats behind him.
But it,
obviously, the configuration of the plane changed when the time before he booked.
Yeah, but Dave didn't change the configuration of the plane.
Well, listen, there's billions of people flying every day.
I know. Okay. It's just that he paid. I know it's not the end of the world, but just that he paid for something.
I pay my income tax and I get nothing. I don't wear the medical card for cigarettes there recently, they wouldn't give it to me.
Yeah, okay. Caroline McInerney, Caroline in Limerick.
Yes. County Clare, actually.
County Clare, very good, very important distinction. Now, you like the extra space.
I just like the extra space. And all I would say to your caller there, it has happened to me 3 times. And in the older aircraft, the emergency seats are row 16 and 17.
Okay.
In the slightly newer aircraft, it's 17 and 18. And Ryanair will show you a seating map that might not be the correct one. The best thing to do is when you want to be safe, if you have the option of row 16 and 17, you book 17. Because if it's the newer aircraft, you're still in emergency seats, problem solved. And I've been put in the wrong seats 3 times.
And how did you resolve it?
I got a refund.
So it wasn't resolved,
You cannot expect a passenger that ended up with extra leg space to give up your seat for you. But
Because the leg space is limited enough as it is, isn't it?
It is. But just book the later row. If there's a choice of 16 and 17, you book 17. If there is a choice of 17 and 18, you book 18. And I've had no problem since.
Okay. Harry. Thanks, Caroline. Harry.
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
You're 6'6".
I'm 6'6", yeah, 25 stone.
Okay. How do you manage on a flight?
Well, I'm not too bad. If I book the aisle seat and get the extra leg room, no, I haven't come across the scenario where I haven't gotten the extra leg room when it comes to Ryanair. But, like, to suggest that if you pay for it and not get it, though, I think is outrageous because it should say in your booking that you paid for it and the seat should just be changed. Like, if somebody that hasn't paid for it, why are they getting the advantage of the leg room regardless of
And do you get hip pain, knee pain?
I would. I actually got cramp on a normal seat with Ryanair, and trying to get up to deal with that was a major inconvenience. But I would on a normal seat, having done it a couple of times. I just can't do it anymore.
What do you mean you can't do it? You just can't get into a normal seat, full stop?
Well, I can get into the normal seat. It's just for, the flight might be 2 hours, but when you take into taxi and everything else, you can be 3 hours.
That's true, absolutely.
Stuck in the seat, and that's
well, would it put you, would it, Harry, would it put you off flying?
Not if I get the extra leg room, but if I pay for something, you would expect to get it. I don't mind having to pay. I expect having to pay. I understand that not everybody is over 6'4", 6'5". That's fine. But once you pay for something to accommodate yourself, well, you should be getting it.
Dave, Harry, I want to come back to Dave because I want to make a point. Dave, you say you fly to Malaga.
Yes.
Yeah. Were you out there last week for the blackout?
I got back before it.
Myself and my brother were out there. And it was Vladimir Lenin, not John, but Vladimir Lenin, who said, "We are only 3 missed meals away from anarchy." And last Monday, yesterday week, in Spain, that was proven almost beyond belief. The electricity went. I was down in a place called Marbella, and the electricity went. I was in a place owned by a wonderful Irish family called Niamh and her family from Clonakilty, and they were doing breakfast, and the electricity went at 11:30. And by 1:30, David, the local the local shop wasn't being looted, but there was people screaming at the door that couldn't open because it was an electric door, you know, the automatic doors. The inside of the supermarket was in complete darkness. The owner of the supermarket, who happens to be a lovely chap, was trying to explain to people from the inside darkness through the locked doors that he couldn't open the door, and people were clamouring for water, for bread, for formula for the children. That was within 2.5 hours. And by, now, by the way, the word had gone around within an hour. Myself and my brother just sat there because you couldn't get anywhere. And people were saying, no cash. Of course, people had no cash. And then someone said, besides, should we go up to the ATM? And someone pointed out, your ATM is gone. Someone then said, I'll run up to my room. And then her husband said, you know, we're on the 17th floor. She said, yeah, I'll get the lift. She says, you won't get the lift. The lift is gone. Everything is gone. And within 2.5 hours, the word had gone around that this was a cyber attack by Putin or North Korea or whatever. And the sense of panic was unbelievable. Unbelievable. And,
but they still haven't found out the real cause, have they?
They still haven't. They still haven't found what they're looking for. But the electricity came back after about seven hours. Now, imagine, I'm not trying to trivialise what happened to you. But imagine if you, I've spoken to people who were stuck on runways for 3, 4, 5 hours and then they were disembarked. But when the electricity goes, as it did in Spain, as I say, I even tried to ring Liveline. But my mobile, to try and get on the programme, we'll call them, and I couldn't, the mobile phones wouldn't work. Everything went.
Yeah.
Everything went. But anyway... Yeah. So, in one sense, I'm not asking to count yourself lucky, but you are getting sympathy from other people who are seem to be encountering the same problem. But Harry, was on Michael's point. Harry's point is, if I accidentally get the extra leg room, the inclination is to hold on to it. Isn't that right, Dave? If I accidentally, I think 16 and 17 are the normal seats. You know, you think 17 and 18. You think 16 and 17 are the normal seats, and 19 and 20 are the extra leg room. And then I'm in the extra leg room seats, and who'd give it up?
Yeah, no, I get that. I found some kind people who have given it up and swapped. And I do appreciate that, but I don't think it should be down to individuals to do that, because, as you say, the inclination is to stick with what you've got. I think it should be that the cabin crew organise things better and ensure people swap so that they get what they paid for. Yeah.
But then the cabin crew are run off their feet. They really, pardon the pun, they really are run off their feet. And
but Joe, at the end of the day, like, if you're paying €20 per flight seat.
Yeah.
And the other person hasn't paid anything, that they've been assigned the seat randomly.
Yeah.
Well, that isn't fair. That's down to the airline, not the person who gets the seat.
Yeah, but Harry, try and explain to that when everyone's trying to get their stuff into the overhead locker and get kids into seat belts and sort out how the seats are small enough as it is. And then you're told, sit down, we're taxiing for a takeoff. And anyway, when are you due to fly again, David?
I've got another flight late June, and I need to look up whether I've got 17 or, based on the advice of other caller, whether I've got 17 or 16 again. That could be the way of solving it.
Okay. Well, glad to be of help. Harry, has it been a problem? Problem for you being 6'6"?
No, once I have the seat, I'm fine, and hopefully Aer Lingus on Thursday when I'm flying to Portugal will have the seat ready for me. So
Okay, Harry, David, Caroline, Michael, John, good to meet you. Good. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie, and anyone growing up around the centre of Dublin in the 70s and the 80s, indeed right up to now, realised or knew at the weekend, if you wanted the best bread in Dublin, we all headed up to the Bretzel Bakery in Portobello in Dublin beside the canal. But little did we know, Willie Despard. Willie, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Thanks for your research for getting through to me.
Okay, Willie, little did we know, and the queues used to snake around the block, am I correct?
That's very definitely during COVID, and when I took over... the weekend, there was nowhere else you could buy fresh bread on a Sunday in Dublin.
Okay, but little did we know you weren't just baking; you were incubating a genius, because your son, Oscar, is the captain of the Cambridge team in the final of University Challenge.
He is, yeah, I know. Myself and his mother, Niamh, are incredibly proud of him. I mean, he not only captains Christ College team, but he had it as an ambition when he went off to do his undergraduate degree in Cambridge that he would make a team, because there wasn't an active University Challenge team in Christ College, Cambridge. And he actually devised and a program to select the best and the brightest and the quickest. It's not all about just knowledge. It's about how quick you are on the buzzer as well. So he devised a test in order to select three other candidates along with himself to represent the college in Cambridge. And it's been great fun over the last 30 weeks now okay, that the competition has been running.
And I see he's featuring in a lot of UK papers as well. Now, when did you realise, now it could only have been 6 weeks ago, Willie, I don't know, when did you realise that Oscar when did yourself and Niamh realise Oscar was different in a lovely way, obviously?
Well, he was very focused from an early age. I mean, he was reading, well before he went to national school, and he just, you know, he challenged some of the teachers in national school because he was affectionately known in the latter years of national school as Oscarpedia, when Wikipedia was more attractive than AI for getting your results. But he's just had an amazing appetite towards knowledge and just expanding his own intellectual brain, for want of a better word. I mean, it's not just the sciences that he's pursued in Cambridge, but he's an active interest in Irish politics. From the age of probably 8 onwards, he knew which elections and who was likely to win in most of the developed economies around the world.
Okay. And I don't know whether you believe in nature versus nurture, but between yourself and Niamh, Willie, or indeed beyond the family, that generation, where did he get it from? Is there a great interest in the family in obviously learning and education?
I mean, I think he just had a happy combination of a number of factors. I mean, both myself and Niamh individually at school level would have been considered very smart, but he definitely gets his dedication and academic side from his mother, who's a professor in Royal College of Surgeons. But she also, as part of our initial meeting, was well able to tell me she, I think, was the first in pharmacology in UCD. So I was quite good at maths, but I also was quite good at socialising as well. So a 2-1 in engineering was my ambition, because I felt a 1 might inhibit my working prospects or my business prospects. So, he definitely preferred the academic route rather than, as you introduced me there, I own and really enjoy running the Bretzel Bakery, and it's a earthy, dynamic business, but I like taking risks. I like business, and whereas his mother would, you know, have stayed in academia all her life. First, I met Niamh in Tennessee while she was doing a second postdoc in Vanderbilt University, and she would have come back with a Newman Scholar Medal with a research group to the Mater Hospital. So she, there was some genes there, but Oscar, what I've really enjoyed with Oscar is that he has complemented his schooling system here, and he just was very lucky to have inspired teachers in national school in Ranelagh.
And what was he like in primary school? Was it becoming evident then? I think you alluded to it earlier.
Your researcher was pushing me to sort of say how early I noticed it, and I would have been walking to school probably within the first month of national school, and he didn't use any expletives, but he got his point across that if they did the letter D again in letterland one more time, he'd do his head in. I wonder where he got his turn the phrase from, okay. But he does have an inquiry mind. Back, he's always had an interest in politics as well, and I think he might have only been 6 or 7, and he looked up at the election posters and said to me, "You know, Dad, that person's smile doesn't match the face," and he really enjoyed the humour when I said, "Well, you know, That might be because they're talking out of both sides of their mouth."
But
visually he picked up on that cue, and even like when he recognised, he has an aspergic type of forensic eye for detail. And that's obviously has stood him well, getting his top marks in both the Leaving Cert exams
is he studying in Cambridge?
He did a 3-year degree in natural sciences, and then fortunately for Cambridge, as a proud parent would say, they snapped him up straight into a PhD in molecular biology.
Okay.
So he's in the, I think it's LMB. A nice little anecdote is that I've heard back from his sister that there's been Nobel laureates stopping in the corridor congratulating on his university challenge performance. Yeah.
Stay with us, Willie, because when Oscar's name was mentioned, I immediately thought of the only other Irish person I know who captained and indeed won the University Challenge, and her name is Freya McClements. You all know her now as the Northern Editor of the Irish Times. I, along with Freya, we wrote a book together called Children of the Troubles, and I accidentally discovered it because she doesn't boast about it. Freya, good afternoon.
Great to talk to you, Joe.
Okay, sick of talking to me. Freya, when did you captain the university? Tell us your story. What was the year?
Well, it was a very long time ago now. It was 2004. Although actually, and Willie will empathise with this about just how long it's been going on. I mean, it was about 2 years in the making, because everything is, by the time you apply and then all the different rounds, and the final actually was filmed, the quarters, semis and finals were filmed in October, and our final was broadcast on Easter Monday.
Oh, wow.
And we were all sworn to secrecy, but I confess I did tell my parents, so my parents knew. So I don't know if Willie and Niamh have the know secretly and can't say, or you have this terrible kind of moment in front of the TV on Monday nights wondering just how he's going to do. But I told my mum and dad, but I said, you cannot tell
You told
anybody.
Your parents. You told your parents. Okay, now.
I saved them that.
But in 2004, Freya, what you achieved was a number of firsts, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny when you think back, but it does seem so long ago. I was studying in Magdalen College in Oxford. I was reading modern history. We won University Challenge, but as it happened, there was a big thing around that time about which institution would be the first to win it 3 times, because no university, no college ever won it 3 times. So when we won, we were the first to win it 3 times. So incredibly, and this had never sort of crossed our minds, but they actually let us keep the trophy in that sort of time-honoured tradition of, you know, if you win it 3 times, you keep it. So the trophy that hopefully Oscar will lift on Monday night is actually a replica, and the original is in the library, the college library in Magdalen and Oxford, and it means that we can go back. We can actually go back and see it whenever we want, and I think we're the only team that can do that. So, yeah, that was pretty amazing.
And did it make a difference winning University Challenge and you being the captain?
Yeah, I mean, it's strange because when you're doing it, and again, I'm sure Oscar will empathise with this, you're just thinking about the next match or the next question. Mm-hmm. You know, if you put in your head, oh my God, we could win this, I think you would completely freak yourself out. So it was only when we won and you then sort of began to realise the enormity of it. I mean, we were in the national papers in the UK and Ireland. It's the thing I was saying just to somebody just the other day, you know, it's still the one thing that it doesn't matter what you do in the rest of your life, it's the one thing people want to talk to you about. You know, job interviews. You know, I've had job interviews and interviews for courses subsequently after leaving Oxford, and the only thing that people want to talk to me about was University Challenge. So it says something about how well loved that this quiz is, and just kind of how well regarded it is. Sort of, it's part of the cultural fabric of society, I think, which is it's so special to have been a part of that.
And Frey, you heard Willie there talk about Oscar being different from an early age.
Yeah, and funny, some of the things that he said there really resonated when he talked about Oscar having an inquiring mind. And I actually, I confess, so I interviewed Oscar last week for a piece that'll be in the Irish Times on Monday to coincide with the final, and we had an amazing chat, and he talked as well about that breadth of knowledge and that just being interested in things. And I think that was always the thing for me, that I was always just interested in picking up these sort of wee scraps of information, things that, you know, it might never be useful in a million years, but suddenly you're there and you're answering a question and it just pops into your head. So, yeah, that really resonated.
And your parents, as I know they're retired now, but they ran a bookshop.
Yeah. So Dad, we had a bookshop in County Derry, second-hand bookshop. And my mum was a teacher, head of French and Spanish modern languages in a grammar school in the north. So I think it was definitely a household for books. You know, books were a big part of it, and Dad would bring home books from the shop, or, you know, would look out for things for me. So I think books and reading were definitely the foundation of that. But I think as well, I mean, people have this image of, you know, people who are into quizzes as sort of being a bit nerdy, or, you know, you sit at home all day memorising off facts. And, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of that, but I actually think it's just about being interested in the world and engaging in it and wanting to know about it. And I have to say, I've been so impressed by Oscar. I mean, some of the answers that he's come out with, you know, things I've never even heard of. Being, and that's not just science, which I've no idea about, you know.
But Freya, what is the skill then, as you were, in being captain of the team? Does that make a difference?
Yeah, I think it does, because, you know, University Challenge, the team is actually really key. And again, it's one of the things that I've noticed with Oscar, and I've been so impressed by him, the way he's really calm, but he encourages everybody. He gets the best out of everybody. You know, he knows if there's a question about, I don't know, say history, and that's someone's speciality, you can see he'll go to them. You can see he's weighing up the different answers. You can see him, you know, reassuring people. You can see, you know, he really knows how to, you know, make the team coalesce, but also get the best out of everybody. And there's a lot of pressure too, because you're trying to answer on the buzzer, but you also have to make the final call on all of the bonuses, particularly if it's something maybe you just don't know. I mean, there was a great moment, I think, last in the semi, and it was about sort of South American grasslands or something, and they kept guessing pampas, and it wasn't pampas in the last one. And Oscar said, "Well, you know, we're going to have to say pampas again, because I mean, if it is, and we don't say it, we're really going to regret it." And they got it, you know. So there's that kind of that thing. I think he carried it with a lot of lightness, but that's a responsibility as well.
But you mentioned Freya, and I want to put this to you, Willie. Why is there no quiz programs? Apart from Ray's wonderful quiz, which I love, on his show every afternoon, it's fairly short. There's no quiz programmes anymore, is there? But Willie, Frey has said people might think you're a bit of a nerd, and you said Oscar was referred to as Oscarpedia at one stage. Did he get any hassle, Willie, because he was so bright?
No, I think he rode his intellect very well. I mean, he was never especially among his peers. He was never condescending. He just would just chime in and be that expert.
Okay.
I mean, and he is interested in other things as well. I mean, he has sat down and watched rugby with me and got great enjoyment out of that. But, you know, he was far too interested in his own intellect to play rugby and have his head bashed around. So, I mean, he would have made that point in first year in secondary school when he didn't have to play rugby because he knew he could be successful on the debating team or in other aspects, you know. But he appreciates excellence in other areas that he wouldn't necessarily pursue himself.
Okay.
I think makes it more balanced.
And is there anything looking back, I don't know if there's not, anything looking back, Willie, where you say, actually, I'm so glad I gave Oscar that book or I asked Oscar to watch that movie or a television programme because I think it impacted on him. Do you follow me?
The quiz side of things was that he was just loved his cuisine and he loved, you know, he did definitely verbalise it to his granny from... my mother from probably about 10 years on that he'd like to be on University Challenge. Whenever she was up, she would sit down and watch the three quiz programmes on BBC in a row religiously. But he also used to, at a very young age, do all of the puzzles in the British tabloids that she was addicted to keep her mind active when she was in her 80s. So, he's an affinity to get on with people twice, three times his age. I mean, like he would have some very close friends from Sandford Park, but I don't think Dr. Green would mind me mentioning his name. I mean, he would be, you know, he would have close friends with his teachers as well. I mean, he just has an ability to relate to adults from a very young age, and that just accelerated his learning because he was never interested in whether Manchester United were winning the Champions League or not, but he was very interested in a politician's opinion on the elections in Britain or France or Germany. You know, so it just as Faye was saying, he pushed himself from the inquiry mind. I mean, when the Troika came into Ireland, he put it upon himself to do a module in international finance so he could understand what was going on in the country.
See, it's a long time. I don't think I remember Quicksilver or Bunny Carr. Where you'd win 2 and 6.
I was in the audience on it with my parents. I don't remember that now that you mention it. I wasn't on the stage, but we were dragged along to the audience.
And then
Gay
did the Irish version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. But again, that's going way back 25 years. Eamon Dunphy did the Irish version of The Weakest Link. That was in 2001. Miriam and Ray and Craig Doyle did Destination, but I think that was just a once-off thing. Ray Foley did Take Me Out. Bunny did Quicksilver, Bunny Carr. Play the Game was, of course, Ronan Collins. Marty did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for a while. Then there was the Lyrics Board, which was a quiz. Actually, it's a very good quiz with Angus McNally and John Cho and the boy. But there's not, even though... anyone that's on YouTube, down in Ardmore at the minute, they are making some incredible quiz shows for the American market.
Really?
For the American, and it's filmed as if it is, there's no deceit in it, but it's filmed as if it's, one is called Shazam, Beat Shazam, the other one is called The Floor with Rob Lowe, but they are quiz shows. But there's no... Freya, I know you, in another life, you set questions for quizzes. What's happening at the minute? Is there
any? I was going to say, I don't know if listeners might remember Blackboard Jungle.
Oh, yeah, with Ray, yeah.
Presented by Ray, which I was on, thankfully.
Kids
no longer exist, but we were on that. But there was also, there was a brilliant... And I think it died out in the 90s, but I remember watching this. There was a like an Irish version of University Challenge called Challenging Times.
Kevin Myers, great, and it was brilliant because unlike
University Challenge, you could keep coming back, you know, so you'd build up the teams and the loyalty, and it was fabulous.
But quiz, are you setting questions for any quiz shows now, Freya?
Well, I set questions for Mastermind, which is actually the things you find out of it. You didn't know that, but it's actually made and recorded in Belfast.
There's a lot of quizzes come from Belfast.
That's where my involvement comes. But there's a lot of quizzes now are done in Belfast as well, and it's part of kind of the BBC's. You know, spreading things among kind of the nations and things.
And then one of the most, I don't know whether you ever listened to it, Willie, one of the most impenetrable quizzes that was very enjoyable on BBC Radio 4 is called the Round Britain Quiz. I don't know.
I'm not familiar with favourite home was Only Connect, which is very obtuse. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Well, guess who represents Northern Ireland in Around Britain Quiz, but none other than Freya. Is there any beginning to your talent? Freya McLean. Freya represents. And just briefly, we won't spend much more time, but will you explain, because you do tell me to listen to it, and I do listen to it, but I cannot understand the questions or the answers. It's like a simplex cross. Can you explain in 12 words or less, given that you are a wordsmith with the Irish Times, what is the trope, the frame of the Round Britain Quiz? Because they're not general knowledge questions.
No, and I think, I mean, just to try and sum it up quick, it's like a radio version of Only Connect. Only Connect is the nearest thing to it on television, but it's much more complex. So, you know, you're never going to have something like a straight, you know,
answer,
you know, what's the capital of France? It's Paris. It's all about kind of like cryptic links and connect. So something you might get five kind of clues, you know, what one was a former kingdom in Turkey, something like that. Well, that's Lydia. And actually you put them all together and it might be, well, you know, why would these all be related to each other? And you find out it's actually the names of the five Bennett sisters in Pride and Prejudice. So there's a lot of different bits of knowledge and kind of sideways thinking and lateral thinking that need to kind of come together. But you have a teammate, thank goodness. It's not just me, my teammate.
I can understand, Freya, why you got on so well with Oscar.
We had a great chat. We really
great chat. Okay, and Willie, it's unfair to ask you, do you know the result? No, you don't. I won't ask you. Don't even answer that. No, don't, Willie.
I did ask my son, okay. And he said, you'll enjoy it much more if you don't know that.
Okay.
And I mean, I have enjoyed every one of the five rounds as a result of not knowing. I mean, because obviously even in the second round, I had no clue that he was going to be winning the second round, let alone being in the final. So every evening that I've watched it with a bigger and bigger crowd of people I know in the club.
Where will you be watching it next Sunday? Next Monday?
I'll be watching with some of the people who knew him as a young sailor in a club that's very dear to me, the National Yacht Club out in Dunleary. Pull down the big screen and we'll have a big...
Right. Now, you mentioned finally, Willie, finally, sorry for going across, I'm stuck for that. You mentioned his massive interest in politics. Would he ever stand for election here or seek to stand?
Well, he's got other ambitions first, but I wouldn't say he wouldn't rule it out. But I mean, I've an interest in politics myself. But my phrase was always that I'd never stand for politics unless I was independently wealthy, so that I wouldn't be influenced by having to keep my job. And he has a stated ambition prior to that is to win a Nobel Prize. So maybe it would be his first ambition, I think, and then you know, he could rest on his laurels maybe and get some kudos for that.
Well, the only way I have a chance the only way I have a chance of winning a Nobel Prize is taking the bell off me hall door. That's the only Nobel Prize I'd win. Willie, has he a preference for a political party? We're not in the middle of an election, so we can ask these questions.
He does. He does, and he would be conservative in his views, even probably compared to mine. But that's because he's very well read, and he actually does, through pluses and minuses, read all of what is good for the economy.
What is his preference?
I think if you did enough Googling, you'd know that he has campaigned for politicians on the Fine Gael side of the fence.
Okay. And we just remind people that there are other political parties available if you are going out to vote. Please contact please look up the RTE website for the full list of candidates in the next election. Okay. Willie Despard, where does the name come from?
A Huguenot name, so we were thrown out of France about the late 1600s.
That was their loss. They've gone downhill ever since. That was their loss. Freya, the interview, which because you have stuff in the paper every single day, yourself and Seanine from the North, incredible coverage in the Irish Times. Your interview is next. With
Monday.
Okay.
With Oscar, to coincide with the final. So Monday morning you can wet your whistle by opening up the
great.
And I just have to say, I hope Oscar better winner. I think Ireland is just going to keel over, but I really hope he wins. He's just been such a fantastic contestant, lovely person. And fingers crossed for him on Monday night.
Like yourself. Okay, Freya, onwards. That's Freya McClemens, an Northern editor of the Irish Times. Award-winning author of Children of the Troubles with myself, where she did, Freya did incredible work when I was wilting. Incredible work, because it was such...
You kept me going, but
you know and I know, we'll probably never fully recover from interviewing all those families during who lost children during the Troubles. So never fully recover. Good to meet them all. Good. Freya McClemens and Willie Despard. Come on, Oscar. Joe with RT Daddy. Suzanne McMahon. Suzanne, good afternoon. Ringing from the UK.
Hi, Joe.
You're commissioning editor.
I'm one of a team of entertainment commissioning editors, There's a few of us. Yeah.
And
I just was listening to your interview
Brilliant. Well, tell us, you were a commissioning editor on University Challenge.
Obviously it's been going a long time. So 30 years or more, and started up on ITV. And my very good friend Pinky is currently the commissioning editor on it. I looked after the last series, and so I just sent a message to the team because I was listening to the interview, going, I'll pass this on to Amal, who's the presenter.
Yeah, I know Amal,
and to Pinky and to Peter and Claire, who are the two executives that make the program, because I can tell you they put their heart into it, like everything. They care so much about the contestants, and they really, really, you know, are so invested in everybody that takes part in it, and in making sure that, you know, they have the best possible experience as well.
And Amal, we know then how he gets the time, because he presents on Radio 4 in the morning as well, today programme. And Suzanne, is there big interest in quizzes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they talked about Only Connect there, and I think there's that BBC Two block of Only Connect and Uni Challenge together, because there's a big interest in hard quizzes, in quizzes that you need to kind of pay attention to. And so, you know, people often talk about that feeling of, like, I got one question right on University Challenge, and that's like a massive win, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's the thing about quizzes that are, you kind of sit there half admiring, and then, you know, you might just come up with one question where you know the answer, and it just gives you this great feel good buzz, because you know that they're supposed to be really, really difficult quizzes.
And when you were growing up, Suzanne, that's a Dublin Irish accent, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm from Lucan. Yeah.
Okay, in Dublin, in West Dublin, and but did you watch quizzes on TV or indeed radio?
But I remember the 5p question on Quicksilver as well.
The 5p.
And Mike Murphy doing. The 5p question. Wasn't there a 2p question? Didn't it start with a 2p question and went up to a 5p question?
Those days were very tough in RTE. five pence and 2 pence is about a cent in today's new money.
And that's why it was Quicksilver, I suppose, because you were playing for silver coins.
Silver, and Norman Metcalf was the musical. And do you remember Jackpot with Terry Wogan?
I vaguely remember that, but I very much remember Mike Murphy doing Murphy's Microquism in the 80s. And the car, you could win a car, because our neighbours were on it. And they were still in the days where everybody would gather around the television like a big event, all sit down together and watch
it. So where have all the quiz shows gone? In Irish,
well, I think there's a lot of them. Okay. In daytime, there's a lot of quiz shows, and there's, you know, pointless shows like that kind of start off in daytime. Yeah. It's often a kind of progression, I suppose. So with Only Connect, it started as BBC Four, and it started as quite niche, and it was kind of proudly niche, you know, to say, you know, we're in it for the nerds, we're in it for the people who are proudly nerds and want to get the tough questions. And it did so well on BBC Four, it progressed onto BBC Two and then continued to be a hit and to grow. So similarly with Pointless, which I think is about 10 years or more now. So started off in daytime in that kind of early evening slot and then, you know, becomes a special for Saturday evenings as well. So, and there's a couple of new ones that we're just recording one in Scotland at the moment with Amanda Holden, which will be coming out in the next couple of months. And so there's still very much part of the entertainment offering here. But I suppose with quizzes, it's almost like you have to just, it's all about the relationships, the buzz that you get on set between the host and the contenders, and then because that's what invests you in whether they're going to win or not.
The ticking clock. Are you familiar, Suzanne, in your reading and whatever about what's happening here in Ireland? And it's not just Ardmore, it's Ashford. There's loads of new studios down that part of the country where they're filming these mega American quiz shows with an American audience. It's incredible.
And
it's
flying, importing everything.
Yeah, it's
audience
incredible.
And everything.
For listeners at home, if you go onto YouTube and look up Beat Shazam, there's clips from Beat Shazam. And I challenge you to show it to one of your mates this evening and say to him, where do you think that's made? Look at the audience, look at the way it's done, and where do you think it's made? And it's made in County Wicklow, where Glen Row was made, Suzanne. By the way, Suzanne, are you any good at quizzes yourself?
No, I have to say no, because then if you ask me a question and I get it wrong, I won't look like
I'm not going to ask a question. And Suzanne, how did you end up in UK TV?
I did the first year of senior college, Ballyfermot.
Oh, great.
Which is obviously from your neighbourhood, in 85 or something. I think it was 85. And then in those days, as you remember, there was nothing. Like, you know, you either got a job in RTE, which was very, very, very limited. And there was nothing. There was none of those studios that thankfully are there now. So I came to London for 3 months, maybe 6 months in 1987 with my boyfriend at the time, and lived in a squat and signed on the dole. And through that route, got into BBC Radio. And like, one of the things I feel very strongly about is both of those things would be illegal now, to sign on to be able to work voluntarily. Yeah. And, you know, it's really hard for young people to economically be able to get into the industry now, because it's so expensive to, you know, cost of living is so expensive. People can't afford to do what I did back then, which was, you know, rock up and say, I'll work for nothing for 3 months or 6 months to show you know.
Okay, well done. Well, congrats to everyone involved. And as I say, there's going to be a big watch here next Monday night because of Oscar Despair from Dublin, Portobello in Dublin, captaining the the Cambridge team. So, Suzanne McManus, thanks indeed, Suzanne. And
good luck to Oscar and everybody next week.
Here, 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 all here.
Right. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rte.ie. Teresa, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You've had a very traumatic start to the year. Your husband died unexpectedly in January.
Yeah, he passed away in hospital in January. He checked himself in and I was going for tests, and the following day I got a phone call while I was walking my dog that I need to go to the hospital. Yeah. And he was gone into cardiac arrest, and I thought I was going to a sick man who had a heart attack, and it turned out he died. So he was actually gone by the time I got to the hospital.
And he was a young man, died unexpectedly. Now, and that in itself is a worthy of reflection.
It's a huge shock,
And then you applied for the widow's pension, and what happened in terms of the details and the ins and out of it and all the paperwork?
Yeah, so I work, and my HR department said, oh, you know, you're entitled to this, you know, and I wouldn't have a clue. I'm 41, so I really don't know anybody else who's a widow my age, you know. Usually they're much more elderly ladies, and I contacted them, filled out the forms, sent it away, and I got it back into my bank account, and I thought this should be taxed or something because I'm working. I don't know what way it works. You know, when you're working, you're not entitled to it all. So I followed up with revenue, and my status was pending. It wasn't widow. So they updated it. And about a month later, I was collecting post, and I picked up a revenue document, and I just kind of, you know, I was at the post, oh, that's just revenue. I need to put it in a pile somewhere to figure out what I'm going to do with it. Mm-hmm. I didn't look at it, and I looked at it last week, and it says that it was an employment detail summary from last year, and it said that just my details, my husband's details, and on the top of it, it said civil partner. Mm. And I was like, how does it say that? You know, because obviously I was married since 2011. And then I was like, what do I do? So I logged on online, and when you log on online, you can just see the forms that were there, and that form was there. And then, you know, when you're looking at a computer screen, mm-hmm. it's not like asking a person a question. So I rang them, and the lady said, okay, we'll investigate it, and kind of put me through to the income department. And next thing, the call dropped, and it was kind of later in the evening. I just left it, and then I just started to worry. I was like, how could my revenue file be wrong? And I just, you know, it's kind of one of many other things, like when I...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the phone. The phone line gone, unfortunately. And Teresa, we managed to get the line back up again. Teresa, is there any explanation from Revenue about why they got the details so wrong?
No, I mean, I haven't gotten any explanation. And it was last week, and I thought it would be a case if I ring them up and they go, oh, that's a huge error. And they just, you know, update it, because I thought they'd be able to look back and say, oh, yeah, you're definitely married. Because I was married since 2011.
Okay.
So it's not like I was only married for 2 years or something like that, you know. So I thought that Revenue would be able to see or be able to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't gotten anything. And I understand things are slow, but it's really disturbing when you get something that's, like, so inaccurate from... like a very important body in the country. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I presume there's an enormous amount of paperwork in terms of utilities. If hopefully it's it was in both your names. But is there an awful lot of paperwork that has to be dealt with when an unexpected passing?
I think what it is that all of a sudden you have to ring up all the utilities and change everything. And that takes up a bit of time, and you can miss things like my daughter is 12 and her phone just went, you know, that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the filling out of forms and stuff, like, I went online and see what I needed to do. And what was really shocking was that I'd already ran revenue and they'd sent me out a form that I needed to fill out. So as to how things got updated after that, I just don't know. Like, I knew that I needed to get an accountant and a solicitor to get it sorted for me.
Okay.
But I've been slowly progressing through stuff, and I wasn't kind of rushing it. I was trying to get it right and get all my documentation together and be able to give them in one lump and, you know, that sort of thing. But there's an awful lot of stuff that needs to be gone through, and it feels like every day you're on the phone to a different provider of something, waiting, you know, on those where they answer the phone in 20 minutes because you're on a list, and every time you ring them up, you're on the same kind of answering machine, and you get through the wrong department. Like, I got a letter saying that my mortgage was gone into arrears, and I'd already contacted to say, well, my husband has died, and even processing that alone, like, not understanding, does your mortgage just freeze? When someone dies, do you have to keep paying? Do you get a bad credit rating if you don't keep paying? Does the insurance just pay out? Does it all? Not understanding what's going to happen, I suppose, is the thing, where you find that you're kind of...
And is there of all the websites and all the quangos that are out there, Theresa, have you come across one that says, we will help you deal with all the paperwork, all the different aspects if your partner has passed? Maybe there Citizens Advice, but remember, Citizens Advice during COVID was stripped back so badly. I know they disagree, but it was stripped back, and I know it was stripped back because I know people who work there, volunteers, are no longer volunteers, unfortunately, even though they want to be. But that's neither here nor there. But is there a website where you can look up?
I haven't found one, and I think it must be a nightmare for anyone who's elderly, especially, because at least I know how to use the internet, and I can read certain things on the internet and search and do Google searches, and I'm still piecing it together from lots of different places.
Yeah.
So if you weren't able to do that for yourself, it would make it even worse, you know, much worse.
Well, above all, what was your husband's first name, please, Therese, if you don't mind?
I don't want to be.
OK, that's absolutely fine, Theresa, but just I wanted to offer my condolences. Revenue offer their condolences. We're unable to discuss tax affairs, interactions, individuals. We will, however, look into this matter further, Theresa, over the course of today, and will engage with your listeners on same directly. We will ensure that any amendments required to your listeners' revenue record are actioned immediately. Theresa, again, condolences and thanks very much and
Thank you so much.
Learnings in that for so many people. Thank you, Theresa. Joe at rte.ie.